Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in. Juneau City officials have proposed a multi-million-dollar wastewater bond package to offset utility rate hikes. The Juneau Assembly will decide whether or not that proposal is on the municipal ballot this fall. This comes as Juneau residents could face a significant increase in water and sewer rates in July. Last night, the Assembly met as a finance committee and unanimously moved forward with a plan for a $10 or $20 million bond question. That's despite hesitation from some members. Assembly member Wade Bryson said he thinks voters need a break.
I want to continue to have the cleanest water in Alaska. We need $20 million to do it. I just want to wait 1 year and not ask the citizens to have a bond question on this election. We've asked them year after year, and they are saying no.
The potential bond would fund critical repairs to the city's water and sewer systems as much of the infrastructure reaches the end of its lifespan. In December, municipal utility staff said the city would need to raise residents' rates by more than 60% over the next 5 years to address those urgent repairs. The utilities division proposed increasing the flat residential water rate by just over 10% starting this July. Then the rate would increase another 10% each July until 2029. At a meeting last night, City Manager Katie Kester said passing a $10 million bond measure would help keep rates down, and a $20 million bond could offset them even more. She said the Assembly could also curb the rates by using sales tax dollars for street and transportation projects on utility infrastructure instead. She says doing that in tandem with a bond measure could make a significant dent in the proposed rate hikes.
We could buy down, essentially, the wastewater rate to 5.5% year after year and the water rate to 0% year after year.
She warned the Assembly that doing that could mean the city takes on fewer street and transportation projects. Despite the initial approval, the plan still needs to go through a few committees before the Assembly votes on whether to put it on the ballot or not. The Juneau Assembly will also decide whether or not utility rates increase. If the bond measure goes to voters, it would be the second one to do so in just 2 years. Last fall, Juneau voters approved a different $10 million wastewater bond to replace infrastructure at the Juneau Douglas Wastewater Treatment Plant. Ketchikan's local governments are pursuing a new sales tax on cruise ship passengers, potentially generating hundreds of thousands of dollars in new revenue. Monday night, the Borough Assembly voted to move ahead with taxing goods and services sold aboard ships while docked within the borough. Borough Attorney Glenn Brown told the Assembly that many other Alaska cruise destinations already collect these taxes.
We're actually a little bit behind the curve. As I note in the summary, Hoonah, Haines, Juneau, Sitka have all done this. Juneau did it in 2022.
Brown said the first year Juneau began collecting these taxes, they saw something like an additional $200,000 in revenue. The sale of goods sold aboard ships within Ketchikan borders have been exempt from sales tax since 2003. This new measure would repeal that exemption. The sale of onboard services have been subject to tax, but according to a borough memo, have historically been treated as though they were also exempt. If passed, the measure would confirm that all goods and services sold in places like onboard salons, boutiques, and restaurants are taxable. The Assembly will hold a public hearing and a final vote on the new sales tax during their next meeting on February 24th, with the intent of enacting the taxes in time for the beginning of the cruise ship season in April. The U.S. Forest Service has completed assessment reports on over 20 topics that will inform how the Tongass National Forest in decades to come. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the last time the Forest Service studied the Tongass this deeply, the movie Titanic was hitting the screens.
The last comprehensive plan for the Tongass was done in 1997. There have been a few amendments since then, but the plan is still missing a lot about the way the forest is today. Barb Miranda is a spokesperson for the U.S. Forest Service.
Our economic fabric has shifted from timber to tourism. The reason why we are doing a plan is not just because we're required to, but everything's changed in the last 25 years.
The assessments are a comprehensive look at what the federal agency knows about the Tongass now and will help inform the new plan. They cover timber, energy, and minerals to subsistence and the status and uses of the land. Nearly all assessments mention climate change as a future challenge. For example, the assessment on subsistence cites salmon as an integral part of both salt and freshwater ecosystems, but their population can be affected by numerous climate-related factors. Another new topic in the plan is carbon stocks. It's the measurement of how much the trees and soil can store carbon dioxide, which is a greenhouse gas that contributes to climate change. Human activities produce a lot, but the 17 million acre Tongass can store a lot. The assessment says carbon and carbon stewardship must be part of Tongass land management.
It's not going to be easy. There's a lot of competing interests on the Tongass. It's a vast forest. And of course, a lot of people have, you know, really particular interest in a particular area because it's our backyard and we're so fortunate to have it as our backyard. But we're looking for those sweet spots where we can all agree.
Another area that the old plan didn't detail was indigenous knowledge. The Forest Service wants the new one to have more input from the Thlinkit, Haida, and Tsimshian who have been living in the region for thousands of years. The new assessment says every part of the Tongass is associated with Native Alaskan tribes. To prepare the new plan, the Forest Service met with a few dozen communities in the region, sharing their latest reports on the status of the Tongass. Altseen Esther Reese is the tribal administrator for Wrangell. She says the Forest Service has done a wonderful job with outreach this past year.
They brought a tribal liaison to town and just really went into depth on really what the tribal priorities are for our specific community and the lands of the Shakin Kwan and what we want to see included in that 25-year plan, because as the original stewards of this land, it's very important that our voice be heard.
She says there are many issues the tribe wants to collaborate with the federal government on, including addressing climate change and transboundary mining. Wrangell suffered a landslide that killed 6 people in 2023. Reese says they'd like to create an early warning system for landslides and other natural disasters. They're also concerned about upriver mining across the border in Canada.
So we talked about transboundary mining issues. We talked about fisheries restoration. We talked about stream monitoring. We talked about mapping plans. So yeah, it's been a good collaborative relationship.
The Forest Service expects the overall comprehensive plan revision to take 3 to 5 years. This spring, they plan to revisit Southeast communities to hear the details of what the new plan should include. And they want feedback on the new batch of assessments, which can be found on the Forest Service's website. Comments on those are due February 24th. Reporting for Coast Alaska in Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
And Delta Junction residents will soon have to make a decision about whether and how they'll restore emergency medical services to their community. That's after the city's only ambulance service, Delta Medical Transport, announced last month that it will stop providing services to the city. And as the Alaska Desk's Shelby Herbert reports, the community will vote on possible alternatives in the coming weeks.
Delta Medical Transport's decision to end its contract with the community of Delta Junction means that after February 21st, residents may have to start providing their own emergency transportation to the nearest hospital, which is almost 100 miles away in Fairbanks. For the last 2 years, Delta Junction paid the company almost exclusively with funding from the American Rescue Plan Act, or ARPA, one of the packages of federal relief money that went out during the pandemic. Last year, the city's budget for emergency medical services was over $500,000. At a meeting last week, residents got a chance to tell the city's Community Action Committee how they want to go about funding EMS in the future, ranging from starting an online fundraiser to making it subscription-based. But there was a common thread in the meeting's public comments: resistance to the idea of tax hikes. Aaron Reinert is a contractor for the state's assessment of emergency medical services. He told attendees that the city could experience $1 million annual shortfall by renewing its ambulance service. And that's not even counting startup costs. And he said yearly fundraisers and charitable donations are not likely to help make up that difference. But this is a pretty common problem throughout rural America, according to Reinert. He said a large portion of the country is served by private rural ambulance services, which often do fewer runs than providers in more populated areas. And that means they're getting less revenue from billing their patients' insurance companies. He says the issue has been a long time in the making.
That comes from a long story of a EMS evolution in America and how we changed in the 80s under the Reagan administration to a fee-for-service model. Prior to that, the federal government actually played an active role in funding EMS across the United States.
He said the EMS funding crunch is also getting worse because of more recent changes at the federal level. Reinert says it's also a huge challenge to train and keep staff. For one, the level of training required to be an emergency medical technician has risen over time. And he says there are also just fewer people who want to do it. Volunteering has been on the decline in the U.S. for almost 20 years.
The number one question I get from elected officials is, when did EMS start costing so much? And of course, our answer is, it's always cost this much. We're now trying to replace what we call the volunteer subsidy, the single greatest funder of EMS across America is volunteerism. We're now trying to find a way to replace it.
Delta Junction city officials will soon review six different ways to fund the ambulance service, and all of them include taxes and fees. Those could be levied on things like the sale of fuel and marijuana. The ideas will go to the city council for approval on February 4th. Then, Delta Junction residents will vote on them in a special election that could come as early as the end of the month. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
And as for the weather here in Juneau this afternoon, it's 32 degrees and clear. Tonight, the low will be around 19 degrees, and tomorrow looks like it's getting a bit warmer with a high of 38 and a low of 23. It's expected to be sunny. Saturday looks like it'll cool off a bit with a high of 23 and a low of 15, and that looks about the same for Sunday. Both days look like they'll be sunny as well. Sunrise was at 7:50 this morning, and sunset was at 4:34 this afternoon, so just about 20 minutes ago. We're getting a total of 8 hours and 43 minutes of daylight and gaining nearly 5 minutes a day now. You're listening to KTOO. Thank you for tuning in.